Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. This is our 2025 summer movie preview episode. We're going to take you through each and every month, May through August, and discuss every major theatrical and streaming release coming your way, as well as a few indies to keep an eye out for. So get ready to make plans, because it is now time for our 2025 summer movie preview. Let's get on with the show. Into the cinema. How about that? Huh? No?
Ooh.
No? Is that juicy? I don't know. Is that good?
That's kind of juicy. I like
spicy.
That.
Spicy. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy.
Troy Heinrichs.
We can go to the cinema. That's fine.
Let's go. Let's all head to the lobby. Let's all head to the lobby. Let's all jump in the bun with the hot dog.
And your pretty works the same way as mine, because that's exactly the joke I was going to make. I was like, as long as we don't go to the lobby together, we're fine.
At least I said the movie. So while you guys are going in the lobby, I'm already in the movie theater.
I still to this day want to know, like, what were the kids in the 50s and 60s thinking when they saw that hot dog jump on the bun at the movie theater? Were they like, that's sexual? Or were they like, that's a tasty hot dog. I'm hungry.
I've never thought hot dogs looked tasty.
So it was always sexual to you, you weirdo.
Yeah. All right. Absolutely.
Have you met Darjan?
That's fair. That is fair. Amanda will not be here. She is traveling. So the entire summer schedule is available for this episode at the post at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Link in the show notes, and you will see what we're talking about. Dates are always subject to change. And yeah, we are going to talk about, we're going to go through the whole freaking summer. We do this every year. People typically like it. So grab like a scratch pad or something and start to take notes of things you actually want to see, because we're going to go week by week. We're going to take each week, mention the titles that are coming out, and then we'll talk about anything worth talking about or we're excited for, and then go on and on and on. So give you an idea what's coming out this summer, because I think this is a good slate.
It's a good slate. So Aaron, I had a question come up to me, and they said, why do you guys talk about May 1st as the start of summer?
Oh, why? Because Marvel says F you to summer rules. Yeah. That's why. Because years ago, Marvel started basically putting a stake on the first week of May as the beginning of summer. And ever since then, it's typically been the kickoff to summer, no matter if a Marvel movie was starting or not. Last year, it was the Fall Guy. That didn't work out so well. But typically, it works pretty well. That's why.
We'll find out, because Marvel's kicking it off this year, too.
They are. And I'm kind of curious if Marvel gets its mojo back here. I've heard great things about Thunderbolts. So we'll find out. You guys ready to jump into this?
Absolutely. Let's go ahead and dive into some awesome movies that are coming out. I'm actually really excited about this whole slate.
Did you write all that down? Like, that was your prepared remarks right there? It sounded very rehearsed. Like, did AMC pay you to say this? Or
no, but what happened was that I'm trying to practice my speaking so that I don't get yelled at anymore.
Okay. No one yells at you for stuttering, John.
I get yelled at a lot, guys.
No, encouraged.
Everybody but Aaron.
Encouraged. Encouraged. It's no one Aaron here would dare mock someone else's.
Aaron asked me if I have to wear a helmet.
Well, I'm just gonna go ahead and mock Aaron, because Aaron's all like, "Let's go to the cinema and we're gonna kick off summer a day early on May 1st on Thursday," because Amazon Prime basically just said, F you theaters, we're going to take over summer and bring it to the couch, because Another Simple Favor is going to feature the continued adventures of widowed single mother Stephanie Kendrick and vlogger Emily by Blake Lively. It's going to be a murder that transpires
in
Emily's extravagant.
Hang on.
He Ron Burgundy that shit.
This is how you start a podcast.
I was just going to keep going, because I was like, I know I messed up, but I was just going to like,
he's sitting there in his mind. He's counting it down. Oh, he's God. Like, oh, it's coming. Let's see if they picked up on it.
That's amazing. Stephanie's played by Anna Kendrick. Is that correct? Did I understand that correct?
Okay. Something like
I think it's how you pronounce it.
Stephanie is played by Kendrick, and vlogger Emily is played by Stephanie is played by Anna Kendrick, who is a vlogger, and Emily is played by Blake Lively, who is a murderer.
That's correct. That's correct.
And now a murder transpires at Emily's extravagant wedding to an Italian businessman on the island of Capri, Italy. The sequel follows Stephanie Smothers and Emily Nelson as they head off to Capri for the extravagant wedding. But when things go very wrong, they're on another whodunit adventure. Also going to feature Alex Newell, Allison Janney, and Henry Golding. So get ready for another fun time with these two ladies, because I love the first movie. I thought it was a stitch.
I saw it at South By, so I'm pretty happy. Well, we can talk about it more when we finish the week.
Yeah, because then Marvel comes screaming into the theater for their normal weekend with Thunderbolts. It's going to revolve around a group of supervillains who go on a mission for the government because there are no Avengers. So we need new Avengers to step up and take over Suicide Squad style. And it's going to be fantastic. Can't wait. And then the big controversy movie of like forever.
Oh, yeah.
Is finally hitting theaters and video on demand that same weekend in Rust. That's right. Western outlaw Harlan Rust, played by Alec Baldwin, who has a bounty on his head, discovers his 13-year-old grandson is convicted of an accidental murder and sentenced to hang.
Jesus, this is too close to life.
That's too close to home.
That's a little bit. I should have buried this one.
Rust travels to Kansas to break his grandson out of prison, and the two fugitives must escape bounty hunters in a legendary U.S. Marshal. And closing out the weekend is The Surfer. In the psychological thriller directed by Lorcan Finnegan, a man returns to the idyllic beach of his childhood to surf with his son, but his desire to hit the waves is thwarted by a group of locals whose mantra is, "Don't live here, don't surf here." Humiliated and angry, the man is drawn into a conflict that keeps rising in concert with the punishing heat of the summer and pushes him to his breaking point. That man is none other than Nick Cage. That's right.
Yeah.
Still working, still being awesome. I think The Surfer is going to look really great.
So I mean, it's Nick Cage. You really can't go wrong with him. But I want to go back to Rust, because for those that don't know, that's the movie where cinematographer Helena Hutchins was killed by a live round and a prop gun. It caused a lot of controversy. Alec Baldwin was charged and then released, etc. I think he's still being sued by the family. I'm really surprised this movie even came out. But then, you know, when you hear the description, I'm really surprised this movie came out. So
yeah, it just gets worse.
And I it's sad, because if it wasn't for the tragedy, I would be really excited. I love a good Western, and it sounds like, you know, a really solid indie Western, and I would be really excited for it. Because of the tragedy, it's one of those things where I'll probably go to support the family, because I know they're going to get some of the return. But man, that's tough.
Yeah, kind of meta.
A little too meta.
Think about it.
It's a little too Crow, you know, mm-hmm. in a lot of respects.
Interesting fun fact about The Surfer. At one point, Nicolas Cage got bit by a snake while producing the film, and it really messed up production for a little while.
So you're not even going to try and stay on target? Is that what we're going to do? We're just going to like jump back to the previous film? Is that what we're doing?
What do you mean?
We were talking about Rust. We're all in on Rust.
I was trying to keep it going. All right. So you want to talk about Rust? Okay. All right. So here's something that's really shitty about this whole story about Rust, is that it's like a cascade of errors when it came to what went wrong in that whole thing, because like you had the cinematography group that were involved in that story. They were all the original group actually walked off the lot that day because they weren't going to be part of anything that had to deal with the filming, because they were already having safety concerns and everything like that. So Helena and the director were both in a place they wouldn't normally be in as they were working through the scene, because they would normally be over in the production village, where they're, you know, the video village area of the filming set. And so it is a mess as to what happened with that, because it's just like, you already have one group who are leaving and upset because of the safety concerns that they were seeing there, and nobody was addressing it. You have two people who are in a spot that didn't belong in. You have a gun that has a round in it that wasn't supposed to have a round in it, and a 23-year-old or 24-year-old woman who the only credit that she had to being a professional armorer was like her dad was some amazing special armorer for years, and that was the only credit she had to herself. And she cared so very little about what happened until she finally realized that somebody died. But otherwise, she was like in the interrogation room. You wanted to know all this? Here we go. In the interrogation room, she's like just leaning back in the chair with her arms behind her head, as if nothing happened.
So not a shark. He was bitten by a snake.
A snake. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So
that's like, full that's circle, baby. That's full circle. Boom. Now let's talk about what we really want to talk about. Another simple favor, not going to theaters, because that pisses Troy off, because you were really looking forward to seeing that one in a theater.
I'm going to still see it because it's going to come to Prime. I'm just saying, like, why isn't it in the... It's Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively and Allison Chaney.
I think
it's
Blake Lively's taken a little bit of a career reckoning to some degree.
Still. There might be a little bit of it, but this is also the second direct sequel that Amazon has picked up instead of intercepted from going to the theaters.
And the other one?
Was Coming to America.
Yeah, they did too. Coming to America.
Yep.
I mean, look, I think that's how they got it. I mean, that's how they got it funded. And they're also doing The Accountant 2, but they're actually releasing that one in theaters.
Yeah.
But I think that's Amazon too. Amazon Studios. If it does well on the service, there's a good chance they have a third one. On the service, it doesn't have to do as well. The first one was a hit, but it wasn't like a massive hit. So, I mean, I think it feels right for streaming. This feels like it'll do really well on streaming as like a thriller. I mean, G20 was on Prime and that was a great movie. So, you know, and this is a good movie. We saw it at South by. So it is a good film. You'll like it. I'm sorry you can't see it in a theater. I would rather see it in a theater too.
Maybe you know what I would. Play it in a theater if it does well the first weekend or so, and they bring it in for like a day or two or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're going to retroactively release it to a theater after seeing how well it does on Amazon. That sounds like exactly what Prime is going to do.
It could happen.
Sorry.
It could not happen. It will not happen.
Unless did that you do come out sounding a little shitty?
Unless you rent a theater, maybe. Maybe yeah. That can happen that way. So Thunderbolts, I got to say, this is a, and I think we should all say it right now, right? Before we get to Superman and First Steps. This is a, to me, make or break year for superhero movies. I think, you know, last year was hardly anything except Deadpool and Wolverine, right? So this year, because we had a surplus for so long, I think if we don't, at least one of these doesn't blow up and become a huge thing, it's a problem for whichever studio doesn't have a hit.
Well, I think maybe it would shift. Maybe this is the year that if Thunderbolts and First Step don't do so well, but Superman like completely rocks the world because James Gunn. Like DC could then be like, look, we're finally back on the map.
Yeah, and they're gonna blame it for all the wrong reasons. They're gonna sit there and say it's because James Gunn is leading us into the right area, as opposed to it being like Marvel sucks. What?
Well, it could be both things, John. It could. James Gunn is a pretty talented director.
He's okay.
He's okay. He's got a great freaking record.
He's okay.
He's great.
He did great on Slither.
When I saw the Superman stuff, like no, I'm kidding. I'm excited.
I am now. No, I'm finally there.
No, I'm there too. I'm still not excited about who's playing Superman, but the rest of it I'm excited about.
Now Thunderbolts, because we're coming back to Superman. But Thunderbolts, this does look like Suicide Squad. Totally agree with that. And
but better.
I mean,
stop it.
Look, I like Suicide Squad minus the Joker. And the sequel is pretty good too, which was, you know, James Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
But this does look better. I agree. It does look better. I think this is kind of like the Marvel movie I want right now. I'm kind of sick of, honestly, things like Fantastic Four. So I'm looking forward to more grounded heroes. But I also really like the DCEU. So I like grounded heroes to begin with. I like heroes that are a little bit grittier and less joke, wit, no story.
Well, and I think for me, unless you're like the top tier people of Marvel, like Spider-Man or Captain America, like those solo films, like Marvel to me has always been like the group. Like it's always been the Avengers or the Thunderbolts or the Fantastic Four or the X-Men. It's always been the larger ensemble, where DC has always been Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, you know, the singular option. So I think that this being a group outing, I think is going to be fantastic.
All right.
Well, to me.
To you. Let's move on to the next week because we got a lot more weeks to cover. So coming out on May 9th, Clown in a Cornfield, which I also saw at South By. I guess there's a lot of South By Southwest movies coming out finally. But in a fading Midwestern town, the local legend of Friendo the Clown becomes all too real as teenagers start to go missing one by one before meeting spectacularly sticky ends. And by that, I mean die. They die. They like get eviscerated. All right. Then we have Romeo and Juliet. Nope, it's not right. It's Juliet and Romeo, because different. And it's a modern reimagining of one of the most beloved love stories of all time with Rebel Wilson and Dan Fogler, just like you'd expect. Then we have Nana's, which is a PG film. This one's on Netflix, still on May 9th. Following the loss of his mother, a man, played by Vince Vaughn, opens up an Italian restaurant, or an ristorante, with a group of local grandmothers as chefs. I just want to say, love this. Love this idea. Love it.
That's a great idea.
Also, we have Shadow Force, which follows an estranged couple with a bounty on their heads. They must go on the run with their son to avoid their former employer, Kerry Washington and Omar Sy, which sounds a little Mr. and Mrs. Smith to me. And then Fight or Flight, which is going to be at theaters and video on demand, I do believe, but no confirmation there. But a mercenary, who's played by Josh Hartnett, takes on the job of tracking down a target on a plane, but must protect her when they're surrounded by people trying to kill both of them. Now, I want to start there, because John, I think, saw an early copy. So, John, Fight or Flight, are you excited for this one?
I am absolutely excited. I'm dying to go see it in the theater. And now that I have A-List, I feel like I'm going to go see it in the theater.
Just check it.
The joke is, I may or may not have accidentally watched it already.
May have.
Cannot confirm.
May have. Please don't. Please don't. Shameful. Just shameful.
Now,
of all these, like, is there anything here that's getting you excited? I will tell you, Clown in a Cornfield is not exactly what it sounds like. It is a little bit different than what it sounds like, but it is a fun little slasher flick.
So it's not an It knockoff?
It is not an It knockoff.
Is this one of the ones that you checked out at South by Southwest?
It is. This is the one that is directed by the same guy who did Dale and, what's that movie? With Alan Tudyk, the slasher movie.
Tucker and Dale.
Tucker and Dale, yeah.
Which I hear they're doing a sequel of, finally.
Yeah, well, it's the same director, so there's a lot of comedy. There's a lot of fun. Outside of that one, and Nana's is probably what I'm most excited about this whole list. Everything else is just kind of, okay, I'd watch it, but, you know, I'm not excited.
Yeah, no, Nona's, it sounds like a really Nona's? Great one.
Did I say it wrong?
It's Nona's.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, it's Nona's, but Nona's as sounds like a really great, like, feel-good thing to sit down and watch. The film features a now-closed, world-famous restaurant, Spirito's in Elizabeth, New Jersey, as the primary location. It's going to be pretty cool.
What John said. Like, they can't top that.
All right.
I like food.
Look, it said in the description to come up with cool shit for these movies to talk about, so I went and found cool shit.
Hey, man, good for you. I'm proud of you.
I'm trying, man.
I mean, my problem
that's
with
where
Juliet,
I got that snake thing from.
My problem with Juliet and Romeo is the fact that it's Rebel Wilson and Dan Fogler, and it's a classic story. Like, I like the idea of trying to flip the script and do a modern retelling of it all, but just don't, like, comedicize it too much, because it takes away. I don't know.
I mean,
I'm a purist in the story sense.
Are you really?
Yeah.
For Why? Romeo and Juliet?
Yeah.
Really?
That's been done so many thousand times over. It doesn't matter how pure you want to make it. It's been ran through like a prom queen.
Here is how, Jesus. Here's how pure I don't care. I think Romeo Must Die is the best interpretation of it. I like Aaliyah. I ain't lying. That's the truth.
Aaliyah and a very stiff looking Jet Li dancing with her.
Jet Li is a marshal. Do you know in Lethal Weapon 4, they had to slow down the camera to catch him on screen? That's not true. He had to slow down. He was so fast, the camera couldn't catch him. So he had to slow down for the camera to catch him.
Well, the only other place you slow down is when you're driving behind a truck that has logs on top or cars on top, because Segway. We call it a Final Destination moment. And that's coming out May 16th, because the new Final Destination Bloodlines hits theaters, and it's the sixth movie of the horror franchise in which death hunts down those who have cheated death.
Wait, why are you like doing your hand like a DJ at a concert that no one can see on a podcast? He's like,
he's trying to hype himself up.
he tried to say, bring the hype. So you gotta, like, you
got
to,
like, get you up. I get it. Get you up. I get it.
Yeah.
All right.
And because nobody likes today, we're going to hurry up tomorrow. A musician plagued by insomnia is pulled into an odyssey with a stranger who begins to unravel the very core of his existence.
Let's see if he can keep this up for the whole episode. Let's
see. I don't know if he can or not.
I hope he can.
Jenna Ortega, Barry Keoghan, and Trey Edwards are going to be here, as well as The Weeknd. So I'm excited for Hurry Up Tomorrow, to be honest. Like, I love musician stories, and the fact that it's like tied into, you know, self-exploration and trying to understand who you are, and Jenna Ortega being here, I think that's going to be a really great thing to counterbalance everybody else that's going to go see Final Destination.
So Final Destination has me very interested because the film's going to introduce a new narrative structure for it. So it's going to start with a premonition in 1969 before moving to the present day, offering a fresh take more or less on how the franchise works.
Take it.
Yeah, I take it too. I would say Hurry Up Tomorrow could be good, but it does have The Weeknd. And I will say, if you watched The Idol, he was really terrible. Just terrible. Well,
The Idol was really terrible.
That's what I'm saying, man. And he was very terrible in it.
Was it just The Weeknd's fault? That was a really bad show.
No, it was a very bad show. All but around. I'm just saying it left a bad taste in the old mouth. But
so to speak.
Yeah. Final Destination. Okay. You don't really need a cool title or even tell. I don't need to know what the plot is. Don't care. I'll go see it. Those are fun movies. They always are. And I like that it's an anthology. You know, it's always different.
Is it different, though? I mean, the title says Bloodlines. Do we find out that one of them's related to, like, somebody from the first movie?
They're going
to
find a way to
break. Oh, that would be really freaking cool.
Allie Larder shows up with Devon Sawa for no reason whatsoever as ghosts. Hey.
You mean the corpses of them because they're dead?
Yeah, exactly.
Or what they do is they actually, as part of the bloodline, they tell the story because it's going from person to person in the bloodline. Oh, see? They could still be in there. There could be like a de-aged Allie Larder doesn't need to be de-aged, but Devon Sawa certainly does.
He could use an ironing. Yeah. What if like Haley Joel Osment shows up and he's drunk and unruly because that's what he does nowadays, and he says, "I see dead people," and it happens to be Allie Larder and Devon Sawa. I'd watch that.
Now we're just conflating storylines, and I like it.
Yeah. All right, May 23rd, Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. Unless it does super well, then it won't be. But it's the eighth installment in the Mission Impossible franchise. It's a direct sequel to Dead Reckoning, but they lost it was Dead Reckoning Part 1, but they lost that whole Part 1 thing because they don't want to tie it in because it didn't do so well because it was during COVID and whatnot. And it stars, you know, Tom Cruise, Haley Atwell, and the rest of them, Simon Pegg, etc. Lilo and Stitch as the live-action version of the famous cartoon, tale of a young girl's close encounter with the galaxy's most wanted extraterrestrial, and a whole lot of involved there. And then we also have, we've got some other cool ones. Fear Street Prom Queen coming to Netflix. This is another Fear Street from, remember it was like, was it 1994?
There was 1994, like 1976.
Whatever it was. There's three movies tied together. This is just one this time. As a Shadyside High School prom queen, candidates are brutally murdered one by one, leaving only one. Everyone speculates as to whether she will be the killer's next target. Maybe she's the killer. And then lastly, Fountain of Youth, which is very Indiana Jones-esque on Apple TV. This is still on May 23rd. So Netflix and Apple TV are really going for the Memorial Day weekend viewings here. Revolves around the mythical Fountain of Youth, where if you drink from it, you live forever. And it stars John Krasinski and Natalie Portman. I believe that one's directed by Guy Ritchie.
It is.
Yep.
What's really cool about Fear Street Prom Queen is that this is the first one that's actually directly from one of the books. The first three movies were a strictly for Netflix testing that they did, but this comes from directly from one of the books. It's actually the first book in the series for the Fear Street series.
Okay. Excellent.
And it was 94, 78, and 60, and
1666.
Way back.
That's definitely, that's a while ago.
Yeah. I love that Netflix and Apple TV are trying to throw into the weekend.
Yeah, man. Me too.
Because like Fountain of Youth, I saw the trailer. I thought John and Natalie, like the chemistry between them is really good. I think the story is going to be really awesome. So I'm actually really excited to see that one.
I'm pissed it's not going to a theater. That's the exact kind of movie I want to see on Memorial Day weekend in a theater.
Okay. I was watching The Studio this week, and I saw it popped up, and I was like, this is going to Apple directly? Like, what the hell?
I know. I would get a subscription for that. So this is smart on them. Like, I would rent it for a month just to watch that one movie. That's how cool I think the trailer is.
Oh, so you could probably buy it, too.
The cast and the director is a strong combination. Both John Krasinski and Natalie Portman are just great on screen no matter where you put them. And then Guy Ritchie directing them is going to be just – it's going to have its own beat and musical tone to it. That's just going to be a lot of fun to watch. Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, it is a $400 million movie. It is one of the most expensive movies ever made.
That is a lot because they had to stop – right? And then restart and whatnot.
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, look, they've spent a lot of money on Fast and Furious movies, Marvel movies, whatever. If this franchise worldwide is huge, so I mean, there's a very good chance they make their money back. Less chance that they don't have China now, but you know, there's a good chance.
Yeah, because like the whole sequence of movies has made more than enough money to pay for it, even if one of them is a stinker, like two, for example.
Do you guys want this to be the last one? I do. I think it's time to end the series.
I think it's time to end the series. As much as I love the series, I can't imagine handing it over to somebody else as far as like, you know, it's got to be handed over. If they ever tried handing it over to somebody else, I just can't imagine it being anyone than Tom Cruise. Hey, I think I just said that three different ways at the same exact time.
That's what they said about Bond. Bond's still going strong. I'm just saying.
That's what they should do with this. That's what they should have done a long time ago with this. Honestly. Like,
yeah, but Tom's not going to allow that to happen. That's the problem.
I get it. He's a major producer on this, and you know, take it for what it is. But I think what they should do is let it sit for another couple of years and then reboot it. You don't even have to be Ethan Hunt. You can be another character from the TV show or whatever. You could just have an ancillary character. It doesn't matter. Just pick a name. John. Fine.
Was he a serial killer now too?
Yeah, well, whatever. But you go and you just cast somebody that's an up and comer and make it a real team effort. This series has never really been effectively a team series. It's always, I think the last one was closer than most of them, but it's always been Tom Cruise first, right? Make it a real team ensemble, make it a real ensemble. And I think people would get excited about this series again.
Yeah, because there's always Mission Impossible team in the original TV series. It was always a full team in the original. Ethan Hunt was just leading a group of people, and that's what made it work for the TV series. A movie like that would be a good way to continue this story on in a different way. One of the things that I am really excited about is Lilo and Stitch. I am partially tired of these reimaginations into a live action thing, but it's Lilo and Stitch. I really love the story of Lilo and Stitch and its themes of stories, its themes of family and whatnot. One of the things I thought was cool is that Chris Sanders, the original voice for Stitch and co-creator of the 2002 movie, he's back as Stitch again for this one too.
I love that.
Hey, as long as Rachel Zegler's not in it, it'll probably do all right.
Yeah. Wow.
Dang. Shots fired.
Just kidding. Just kidding, Rach.
Are you on like nickname terms with her now?
Yep.
Okay. I mean, she's not making money.
Well, somebody that he is on nickname terms with is actually Daniel LaRusso, because Aaron and him met each other.
That's right. We hung out.
Live in person.
Twice.
And he's coming back on May 30th for Karate Kid Legends. It's going to be amazing because they're going to tie Mr. Han and Daniel LaRusso together so we can finally combine all of the movies into one mega epic universe. It's going to have a new kid who's basically growing up in New York City, and he's going to have to figure out how to take a combination of Kung Fu and Miyagi-Do Karate and combine those two things, two branches, one tree, to make it happen. Some of the speculation is that Han is actually related to Mr. Miyagi's wife, and that's how they're tied into the Miyagi-Do karate family. So you can check that out when Karate Kid Legends hits the theaters on May 30th with Jackie Chan and Ralph Macchio starring. Also that weekend, you're going to see Bring Her Back, a brother and sister uncover a terrifying ritual at the secluded home of their new foster mother.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds heavy.
So I'm going to say I have to eat some crow on this, because for, I don't know, 5 years, I had been avoiding the whole Cobra Kai bullshit for as much as possible.
You showed up.
Yeah, I did show you guys. I finally sat down and watched it. I finally had a lot of fun. And tying it back to the subject matter here, the Karate Kid movie Legends, I decided to sit down and rewatch the first three Karate Kid movies.
Ooh.
And I was shocked
how bad the third one was.
Well, the third one, yeah, I mean, yes and no, but like I was still shocked as to like how much they mostly hold up, you know?
They do, especially the first two in particular. Yeah, they really do. Yep. I agree.
I for some reason I had this memory in my head about those movies being like boring and caca and just not really a worth to sit down and watch, but after watching Cobra Kai, I was like, I'm going to check these out again. And then, yeah, I mean, I was really like the Terry Silver story. I was like, in the TV show, when he shows up, I'm like, oh, I remember him being really weird. And then they tell this whole story where he's all coked out and crazy. And I'm like, okay, now that makes so much more sense. And then seeing him again in the third movie, I'm like, all right, this makes so much more sense. That's cool. But I'm excited for Karate Kid Legends.
I've been a big fan of Thomas Ian Griffith, who played Terry Silver for a long time. So I was happy to see him come back because I feel like he got an unfair deal. He got compared to Steven Seagal too much when he started coming out. And he's much, he was better at martial arts, if you ask me, but
What's that ponytail?
he had a ponytail and it seemed very similar. But I will say, like, when you go back and rewatch, especially the first one after you've seen Cobra Kai, it hits different. And it's always been a favorite movie with me. But I always hated Johnny Lawrence before. Now I just have nothing but empathy for this guy. And at the end when he's like, "You're all right, LaRusso," or whatever he says, I'm just like, "God, see? They could have been besties right there. Yeah. Damn it."
Yeah.
Yeah. But the sad part is Johnny Lawrence isn't in this movie, which takes my excitement out of it, because that's who I want to see in a Karate Kid Legends movie.
He's the Karate Kid to Aaron.
Yeah, now he's the Karate Kid to me. Finally. Are you excited for that, Troy?
I'm excited for it because it's going to delve into the history of Miyagi, which we only got a very little bit of in the final season of Cobra Kai.
Sure.
So the fact that we can go back and focus on, like, what is the whole Miyagi-Do and the concepts of karate and the concepts of kung fu and how those are coming together. I think that's really what this story is going to be about. And so how do you bridge that together? Because last we saw Mr. Han, he's kind of like down and out, you know, trying to get his own life back together again. So now that we can see Mr. Han's got his life back together again, kind of running his own dojo and has to come find Daniel-san in order to help out his student, I think that's actually going to be a really great story to see, like, how Daniel-san has now become Miyagi in a way for this situation.
I'm more excited for Bring Her Back. And I know probably not for you guys, but the directors, Danny Filippo and Michael Filippo, I don't remember how to say it correctly, and I'm sure I screwed that up, but they directed Talk to Me. I don't know if you saw that one, but that's a great freaking horror movie.
Yeah, you like that one.
I like that one a lot. It's super menacing and creepy and dark, and this is their follow-up to that. And the trailer doesn't tell you a whole lot, and I don't want to know. I really don't. I'm not going to read much into this one, because Talk to Me was like a huge surprise. And by the time I got done with it, I'm like, holy shit, that was kind of evil. I want to see what they do here, because I'm excited for them as horror filmmakers. All right, now we go to June 6th. And that is Ballerina. That's from the world of John Wick. A female assassin is bent on revenge, and she hunts down those responsible for killing her family. Not a dog, her family. And that stars Ana de Armas, as well as the usual John Wick friends and foes, including Keanu Reeves, and, you know, you're going to get it. Lance Reddick pops up here. Then we have The Ritual. Tells the story of two priests from different backgrounds who must work together to perform an exorcism that will aim to help a possessed young woman. Stars Al Pacino. So I'm sure there won't be overacting at all in this thing. I'm sure it'll be very grounded and down to earth.
Hoo-wah!
Hoo-wah! Look at the ass of that devil! That'll be basically what we're looking for. I'm sorry, he talks like that. That is not offensive. Dangerous Animals. When Zephyr, a savvy and free-spirited surfer, is abducted by shark-obsessed serial killer held captive on his boat, she must figure out how to escape before he carries out a ritualistic feeding to the sharks below. Stars Nick Leppard and Jai Courtney. And supposedly Jai Courtney is phenomenal in this.
What did you just read?
That happened. That's the plot. Look it up. The Phoenician Scheme.
Wait. Is he a serial killer of sharks?
No.
Or a serial killer obsessed. Of people that likes sharks?
He feeds them to sharks.
Oh, I got you now. Okay. Yeah.
He's like Dexter, except, you know, he doesn't kill them until they're in the water.
Got it.
He lets the sharks do the work.
Exactly. The Phoenician Scheme. This is Benicio del Toro. Stars in the film as Zaza Korda, one of the richest men in Europe, while Mia Tripleton plays his daughter and Michael Cera plays his tutor. And this is a Wes Anderson film. That's about all we know about it. It's Wes Anderson. If you're a Wes Anderson fan, you're going to see it. If you're not, you will not. That is basically what Wes Anderson movies are.
Aaron says that because he immediately hates anything Wes Anderson does.
I am quirked out. That's all I'm saying. I'm over quirked.
Yeah, I would say he's not a complete hater of Wes Anderson. He's just quirked out on stylized film.
Yeah.
Don't have to apologize for Aaron.
It's okay. He can speak for me. He got it right. Then we have The Life of Chuck. Mike Flanagan, director I love. Great horror director. And once again, he's tackling Stephen King, but a mind-boggling adaptation of Stephen King's novella told in reverse chronological order. It's a quote-unquote feel-good apocalypse story following the life of an ordinary man named Chuck. And that's all I'm going to say. Played by Tom Hiddleston. That's one, and one more, Predator, Killer of Killers. This is on Hulu. It's a 3-part animated anthology that showcases Yuya warriors hunting human prey across global history. And this is Dan Trachtenberg. This was like a secret movie, that series that they did. But anyway, so there we go.
That guy and his secret movies, man.
Hey, Dan Trachtenberg, everything he's done so far seems like he wins every time. So.
I'm sure it'll be good if you like animated. But I want to go back to Life of Chuck before you talk about anything else. So you know that story?
I know of the story.
Okay.
So, enough to know, like, I saw the log line for this one, and I was like, yes, that's that one. Okay, great. I'm going to go see that one.
I have heard word of mouth coming out of screenings and whatnot are phenomenal. Like, phenomenal. And this is not a horror film, the way I understand it. It is not. This is like an upbeat.
It's like a Hearts in Atlantis, yes. Feel good, yeah, cry at the end movie.
Mike Flanagan, known for, you know, the Netflix horror shows and things like that. And this is his, you know, it's not Midnight Mass. This is something sweeter. And I'm looking forward to it. I think he can do a great job. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, I'm excited for that too. So the ritual with Al Pacino is he's actually portraying a real life priest here. It's Father Theopolis Riesling, which Al Pacino says he never saw The Exorcist prior to filming this. But the movie is going to be based off of the 1928 exorcism of Anna Eklund, one of the most documented cases in American history.
Oh, cool. He's still going to be like, hoo-ah!
Anna, go ahead and show me that ass!
He can't help himself. He just can't.
But I mean, I take offense though, Aaron, that you said that John Wick's dog was not his family.
Oh, no, like, hang on.
Come on.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. I take it back.
Especially how he got the dog. Like,
you're right. Dude, you're right. A dog is definitely family. If it was a cat, it's a different story. It's a dog. That's family.
It's definitely a dog. It's definitely part of family. So I think it's interesting that where they're making this so it takes place between chapter 3 and chapter 4. So that's how they're shoehorning so many people into this.
And we're getting a John Wick chapter 5. So we don't know. Does that mean that they're going to pretend like he faked it? Because a lot of people, you know, there's a nod at the end of chapter 4 that maybe he's not dead. Sorry, John. You should have watched it by now. But maybe they're going to do that, or they could do something from like a previous time like this is doing.
Maybe I'll watch it after I watch something else I'm being forced to watch.
You're missing out on one of the best action films of all time, but you do. You.
I know. I love the movies. I love the movies.
Painfully obvious. Yeah. Painfully
obvious. Yeah. So I love the movies.
Like just beating the door down to go see it.
I own it. I still haven't watched it.
Go ahead, Troy.
Oh my goodness. Where the hell are we? That's right. We're moving into Father's Day weekend. June 12th, 1st is Deep Cover over on Prime. Movie takes place in London's criminal underworld. 3 improv actors are hired by the police to help with undercover operations. They end up getting involved with a criminal gang.
I love that.
It sounds so good. Bryce Dallas Howard's going to be in this along with Orlando Bloom and Laurie McDonald and Sean Bean.
He's dead.
Totally.
Gotta die. Tennis contract.
What won't die though is animated to live action remakes, because How to Train Your Dragon flies into theaters.
It is segue
on June 13th on the rugged Isle of Burke, where Vikings and dragons have been bitter enemies for generations. Hiccup stands apart. The inventive yet overlooked son of Chief Stoic in the vast Hiccup defies centuries of tradition when he actually befriends a dragon named Toothless, a feared Night Fury dragon. Their unlikely bond reveals the true nature of dragons, challenging the very foundations of Viking society. Hmm. And if anybody was on Epic Universe Talk, you can see Toothless in animated form for the new Universal Park. Can't wait to go and pet Toothless. I'm so excited.
And Toothless's kids. You can see them, the little robots that run around.
Aww.
Shh, spoilers. There's people that have never seen the cartoons.
Guilty.
Yeah, you know what? Fuck them.
Uh-oh. I am them, but okay.
Final movie of that weekend is going to be The Materialists.
Nope, there's two more. There's two more.
There's two more. Yeah. Oh, there's not that weekend.
Oh, I'll tell you. I must have added it later. Go ahead.
Okay, fine. Ron Burgundy all day long. Materialists follows a young man, ambitious New York City matchmaker, who finds herself torn between the perfect match and her imperfect ex. This is Zadie, Pedro Pascal, Chris Evans, and Dakota Johnson, starring in Materialists.
And the last one that Troy does not see is Echo Valley on Apple TV+. That's a tense thriller starring Julianne Moore and Sydney Sweeney. Moore plays a mother whose troubled daughter comes home covered in someone else's blood, forcing her into a desperate fight to protect her family. I'm sure there's a Euphoria tie-in here somewhere.
I know you didn't see How to Train Your Dragon, but I am so excited for this. I love the fact that the original director of the animated series, Dean DeBlois, I'm excited that he's back to direct it. And Jared Butler is back as Stoic. It's one of my favorite series ever.
Rewind about 20 minutes when John was like, I really hate these animated to real life remakes. Totally going to go see How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, you know what? You can say that, but there is always going to be exceptions to the rule. And Lilo and Stitch has a special place in my heart. So does How to Train Your Dragon.
Fair enough. I might see How to Train Your Dragon because I've never seen the cartoon, so it's all new to me. So it'll be like, yay. Materialist.
You have to go see it.
Okay, I will. Materialist, I got to be honest. I love Pedro Pascal. I'm getting tired of Pedro Pascal. He's literally in everything. He's going to burn out. As all the love I have for the guy, and he's doing everything he can to show up in everything I see, which is automatically going to make people get tired of him. And I'm happy he finally has like a phenomenal success because he's been a great actor for a long time. But my God, say no once in a while.
Hey, he likes to work.
I'm not knocking that. I love the guy.
You know what's interesting?
What's that?
Is that Pixar decided to not put something out Father's Day weekend.
They're coming out the next weekend.
I know.
The following weekend on June 20th. But we'll get there in a second. But Elio comes out, which revolves around Elio, a boy who finds himself transported across the galaxy, mistaken for the intergalactic ambassador for our planet Earth. It happens. Also, 28 years later, that's a sequel to 28 Weeks Later, with Alex Garland writing again and Danny Boyle directing again, nearly three decades after. And remember, they didn't come back for the second movie. So this is... Danny Boyle is finally returning to the director's chair here. And they actually have a trilogy set up. They've got the first two films already filmed, and they're waiting for financing for the third movie. So how successful this is determines if you get that third movie. So nearly three decades after the Rage virus outbreak, survivors lie in a heavily fortified island colony until a risky mainland mission reveals mutated horrors among both the infected and other survivors. And that's not it. It's a busy week, man. We've got Sovereign, follows a father and son, who's Nick Offerman and Jacob Tremblay, who identified as sovereign citizens, a form of anti-government extremists. And as they venture across the country and find themselves in a standoff with a chief of police, who's played by Dennis Quaid, that sets off an intense manhunt with tragic consequences. This is my kind of movie in the summer because it's less bombastic and pulpy and more it sounds like a more of a character thriller. Then lastly, we have Brideheart, which is Rebel Wilson. Apparently, she's been busy. She's going to play a badass secret agent, Sam, who's been tasked with one of her hardest missions yet, being a maid of honor for her childhood best friend. And of course, they're going to have a bunch of action set pieces and whatnot. There you go. That's that weekend. I think, Troy, you're going to see Elio. That's my plan.
I will definitely see Elio, but I am super stoked to go to 28 Years Later. Not only because Alice Garland is back writing, not only because Danny Boyle is back, but also because my girlfriend is in the movie.
Who's that?
Jodie Comer.
Oh, God, I love Jodie Comer.
So good.
Aaron Taylor Johnson's in it, too. I guess this is going to
be... Rafe is going to be in it, too. It's going to be great.
It's going to be good.
Yep.
At least good. At the very least, it will be good. And I think it might reinvigorate zombies, because I think that's become a little tired. Last of Us accepted.
This is a fun fact about this movie.
Not zombies.
They actually filmed this entire movie on an iPhone 15 Pro Max. And they did it specifically to capture the whole gritty, realistic aesthetic of the feel they were going for. I both like and hate this thing because I like it because I like seeing new media or new forms of media being used to capture these big movies, like something that anybody on the street can do. I like it for that reason. I hate it because it's like, we did it on an iPhone because we had to go Mac. Yeah.
That's what we did, see?
That's what we did. We're so
put the lotion thinking. In the basket.
That's all I hear with that voice. We're going to drive our Teslas away with our iPhones as the keys, and that's what we're going to do.
Duly noted. Duly noted. I'll see Sovereign, and then I'll see 28 Years Later.
All right. Well, then we'll move on to June 27th. Racing into the final week of the month is F1. a Formula One driver comes out of retirement to compete against a rookie driver and the titans of the sport.
Oh, gosh.
I love good racing movies. Mm-hmm. I hope this one really shows up because Megan 2.0 is the one we didn't need, but we're going to get because unbeknownst to them, the underlying tech for Megan has been stolen and misused by a powerful defense contractor to create a military-grade weapon known as Amelia, the ultimate killer infiltration spy. But as Amelia's self-awareness increases, she becomes decidedly less interested in taking orders from the humans. With the future of human existence on the line, Gemma realizes that only option is to resurrect Megan and give her a few upgrades, making her faster, stronger, and more lethal. As the paths collide, the original AI bitch is about to meet her match.
They keep calling her a bitch. It's like, come on now.
Yeah, that's a little tired. I think I'm going to read a book this weekend.
Yeah, I'm not excited. There is one more that's not on your list, but it's called Sorry Baby. It's a very small indie dramedy that's got a lot of buzz at Sundance. It's a story of a young woman dealing with an unexpected pregnancy and wavering between her carefree past and responsible future. A lot of raves about that movie. And still, that's a movie that's a weekend I'm probably going to relax. I don't care about Formula One racing. I just don't. I saw Days of Thunder. It was fine.
Drive was good too.
Drive?
what the fuck?
That's not a racing movie. I mean, I guess they're in a car going really fast, but
he's not even going fast at one point. He's actually driving slow at one point.
It's about racing. It's good.
Drive is not about racing. Did you not see Drive?
Is that the one where he picks up the quarters as he goes around the track?
No.
Wait, wasn't there a Sylvester Stallone movie called Drive?
Yeah.
He might be right. Oh. I'd hate it if he was.
Driven.
Okay. Okay. So he's wrong. Okay.
He's still wrong.
All right. Thank God.
Drive is the movie with
Ryan Gosling. Yeah. It's a Carey Mulligan. It's a great movie.
Great movie. Great soundtrack, too.
Driven.
That was terrible. The one you're thinking of was terrible. Just terrible.
I just liked when he picks up the coins. I thought that was a cool move.
So weird. All right. July 2nd. Jurassic Park. Nope. Wrong. Jurassic World Rebirth. Giving birth to a world. 5 years after the events of Jurassic World Dominion, the planet's ecology has proven largely inhospitable to dinosaurs. Those remain and exist in isolated equatorial environments with climates resembling the one in which they once thrived. Somebody found that frickin' shaving cream can. The three most colossal creatures within that tropical biosphere hold the key to a drug that will bring miraculous life-saving benefits to humankind. So you know we got to get in there and get that dinosaur stuff. And this stars Scarlett Johansson and a bunch of other people. It's a freaking dinosaur movie. People are going to see it. But that's not it. Believe it or not, that's not it over the 4th of July weekend. There's also The Old Guard 2 on Netflix, a sequel to the 2020 action hit The Old Guard, where Charlize Theron and her team of immortal mercenaries return, and Henry Golding is with them as well. Also on July 2nd, Heads of State, which is on Prime Video, the UK Prime Minister, who's played by Idris freaking Elba, and the US President, who's like a blockbuster movie icon, apparently, is played by John Cena, has a public rivalry that risks their country's alliance, but when they become targets of a powerful enemy, they're forced to rely on each other as they go on a wild multinational run. Allied with Noelle, a brilliant MI6 agent, who's Priyanka Chopra Jonas, they must find a way to thwart a conspiracy that threatens the free world. It looks like a lot of fun. It looks stupid, but fun. So that's the July 4th weekend. I have to say, don't care about Old Guard 2. I am a sucker for a dinosaur movie. How about y'all?
I'm going to say that Old Guard 2 has my interest because I did enjoy the first one, and everyone's back for this one. So it also is going to give us Uma Thurman and Henry Golden, as you talked about, that'll be expanding the universe's immortal
world. Do you remember the first one, really?
I do. I've watched it a couple times out of like shits and giggles.
Okay.
So I do enjoy it, especially the end of that. What I think is very cool about Jurassic World Rebirth is that composer Alexander Desplat, who's known for The Shape of Water and Harry Potter, he's taking over scoring duties in hopes of honoring John Williams' iconic themes. And the film is going to feature that new location. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with it.
Yeah, I'm all about the oldest guard there ever was, which was dinosaurs. And ScarJo.
Son of a bitch.
I mean, how do you say no to ScarJo?
You know, she's apparently this has been one of her dreams, is to be in a Jurassic Park movie. So that's kind of cool. I mean, to know that she's like a huge fan of these movies and she's just wanted to be in one for her whole career.
That sounds like it's going to be great then. Because when you love your work, you know.
Hey, you know, whatever. Works for me. Charlize, Scarlett Johansson, either way, you're doing okay that weekend.
Sounds great. Going into July 11th, we go to a distant planet called the North Pole to find a superhero that is going to save all superhero movies.
That's a planet.
Of all time. Yes, that's right. Superman, Clark Kent, is coming back. And he's going to go through his entire heritage of Kryptonian stuff because they finally brought the freaking robots into the universe. I'm so excited about that.
And you're like, family.
Yes. It's going to go through the upbringing as Clark Kent of Smallville, Kansas. He's the embodiment of truth, justice, and the American way that used to exist, you know, before certain election period times happened. Guided by human kindness in a world that sees kindness as old-fashioned. It's going to be great because David Coruscant is here. Rachel Brosnahan is in here. So excited. Love Rachel. And James Gunn, obviously, directing.
That's the only movie out that weekend. What do you guys think?
Because nobody else wants to be there. They're scared.
It's probably true.
I'm interested to see how this works out because what they're really aiming for, and it's a really a smart move on James Gunn's part, which is they're taking a lot of the classic elements of Superman and trying to put that on the screen. So a lot of like Golden Age Superman, a lot of that storytelling is trying to bring in that those classical elements that are strong and powerful about Superman without having to sacrifice it for the current times. And I think that's a great element, especially with the way we love Captain America, because it did sort of the same thing where it took a lot of great classical elements of the character to bring it into times where he just doesn't fit in. And that's where I really enjoy the idea.
Look, Superman has notoriously, in my opinion, been a lame superhero. I'm sorry. He's very Aquaman for me. This is my opinion. I'm sorry. I could say what I want. I find him to be a very lame superhero. When you're all empowered, it's not that cool to me, because you're not really, it's not as good of a fight, I guess. Now Christopher Reeve is the exception, and I did like Henry Cavill, but a lot of that was because of the angst, and I liked a lot of the stuff a lot of people did not like outside of Martha. I think we all can agree, dumbest plot point ever, or at least top five. But in terms of the goody two shoes, he's so sweet, he's all American, he never, you know, falters, it doesn't do anything for me. It's kind of old news, in my opinion. I like flawed anti-hero more than I do this goody-two-shoes type. But, and I didn't love the first trailer, but I've seen subsequent trailers and whatnot, and I think it's starting to grow on me. And maybe this is the kind of movie we need in a time like this, where you have something reminding you it's okay to be a goody-two-shoes. It's okay to be good-natured and do kindness and good things and good deeds for the sake of others, as opposed to worrying about yourself. We live in a time of selflessness, right? It's everywhere, everywhere. I think there's something like 57% of Gen Z wants to be an influencer. That's insane to me. That's insane to me, but that's a real statistic.
Did you say selflessness?
Selfishness.
Yes.
Okay. I think this is a good movie for a time like this, for that showcases someone that is living a selfless life. So it could be, if he can capture that, if he can make it much deeper than just a superhero movie and showcase kind of a lot of what Christopher Reeve was masterful at, which was showing the humanity of the character, this could be great. He has an opportunity. That's all I'm saying.
One of the reasons why I've always loved Superman as a character is primarily the fact that, like, for a lot of the aspects of, like, he is good for goodness sake, you know, he is good for the sake of everyone around him, because if he understands that if he ever lets loose, he ever loses control, he ever has a problem or doesn't control a sneeze the right way, he can destroy a city block on accident. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that I think is great, because any other character in any other story would actually take that and be like, this is just the way I am. That's going to be the way it is. And it's going to be your fucking problem. But that's what's great about Superman, is that it's not everyone's problem. It's something that he takes very good care to control and show people how everyone can try to be better. I love the character of Superman for those reasons. Ability to show kindness and show caring and not let it be something that's seen as weakness at any ever point in his history as a character has always been something I've been drawn to.
Yeah, it's why Superman 1 and 2 are such a good back-to-back combo when it first came out, because you have that first movie teaching us who Superman is and how he has to learn how to love the planet, love humanity, and understand that these are people that he can live amongst, and then gives up his powers in the second movie just as we need him most, because the rest of his planet shows up to wreak havoc on Earth. And he's like, I have to fight for the humans against my own people. And so when you get to that kind of a moral code, that's the moral code I think we need now as a society today. So if they can pull off that kind of feel from those original two movies, I think we're in for a real treat.
And it's interesting that James Gunn, the guy who produced Brightburn, is now making a Superman movie. If you never saw Brightburn, it's like Superman, if Superman was a sociopath.
That's true.
Now he's doing the writer.
And person. Sociopath is a kind way of putting it.
A very, very nice way of putting it. He's a straight up serial killer. All right. So July 18th, Eddington, which is set in 2020 in the small town of Eddington, New Mexico, depicts a powder keg conflict where a dispute between a sheriff with higher aspirations and a mayor escalates. Now, this is directed by Ari Aster. You know who did that? Midsommar. Remember that one? And this also stars Pedro Pascal, who's in everything. Come on, Zaddy. Take a day off. Emma Stone and Austin Butler. So it's a really strong cast. Then we have Smurfs, which is a Smurftastic musical story. Who cares what the plot is there? But John Goodman, James Corden, Hannah Waddingham, I love her. Octavia Spencer, love her. Rihanna, love her. Nick Offerman, love him. So a good voice cast. And then we also have I Know What You Did Last Summer. Trailer is out now. You can go check it out. It looks like it should be on the CW. But original stars Jennifer Love Hewitt and Freddie Prinze Jr. reprise their roles as Julie and Ray, now parents, or grandparents almost, and when a new generation of teens in their small town commits a fatal mistake and finds themselves stalked by a hook-wielding killer. Now, that's a movie that I like the original film a lot. There's one of their lines in that movie I've quoted more often, probably than most movie lines in my life, which is, oh, that's balanced. And if you've seen the movie, it's just really funny. Also, you know, what are you waiting for is obviously a big one too. So I will watch it. I just think the trailer is not doing it much justice.
You mentioned how it seems like it belongs straight out of the CW. Did you remember the first movie actually is like the blueprint for CW
shows? I like the first movie. I thought it was very good. I know Kevin Williamson wrote it, but it's a good movie. It's a solid slasher flick.
No, it is a solid slasher flick, but I'm just saying that it still felt like CW back then. So I think the Eddington is a very interesting idea, especially seeing how it is Ari Aster, who's, because he is known for horror movies like Hereditary and Midsommar, but this one is going to be a black comedy western. I'm interested to check that out.
Look, I Know What You Did Last Summer, when Kevin Williamson wrote it, was not a CW thing. It was the WB. Okay.
That's right. Exactly.
Totally different.
My bad.
Big difference.
Totally different.
My bad.
There was actually like, you know, heart and feeling in the shows on the WB. There not was just the frog. Pretty people having sex all the time.
Exactly. I don't want to wait for you to desecrate my movie.
Yeah.
Get it?
So, by the minute I saw the hook in the trailer, I was like, do we have to do the hook again? Can we have a different serial killer for modern times? Come on. Seriously. But I am glad that Freddie Prinze and Jennifer Love Hewitt are back.
What I would love is if they went back and did the book. There's an actual book that they don't follow for any of these movies or TV shows or anything. Go do that. Go look it up. The story is actually good. Go do that. Jesus.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There was that TV show that
there was the Amazon show that.
And it still wasn't like the book. There's a book that this is all stolen from, or sorry, rights were bought from, and they have yet to actually do the book. It's a good book. Do that.
Ah. Different mediums can do it different ways.
You can at least try.
That sounded dirty.
It doesn't have to be like the video game, Aaron.
I get that, Stud, but I'm just, says the guy who wants The Last of Us to be just like the video game. But I understand it, but they haven't done that yet, and they made so many movies and TV shows. Just try it. If you're going to reboot it, I don't know, just do something. It would have been different. That's okay.
But see, I heard you like read off Goodman, Corden, Waddingham, Spencer, mm-hmm. Rihanna, Offerman.
It's Smurfs.
I'm like, are we getting a Smurfs musical? Because that shit sounds amazing.
Yeah, I said that. A Smurftastic, Smurftastic
musical story. Well, there's a difference between a musical story and a musical. As like, is it really a musical? If it's a musical, I'm in.
John, is this goddamn semantics he's got going on over here? Is that what
I think he's having a stroke, actually.
Is this Smurfmantics?
If it's a Smurf story with a few songs, that's one thing. If it's like an actual musical, like that's cool.
Who cares? I'm never like, seeing it.
If he starts using Smurf as a noun, verb, and an action, we're screwed. Okay.
Oh, Smurf that. Smurf ass.
Hey, I'm just excited that Emma Stone and Austin Butler are also playing alongside Pedro Pascal and Eddington. That makes it worth a watch.
It doesn't. All right.
It doesn't. He says he hasn't even gotten to the movie yet. He's already tired of Pedro Pascal.
No,
he's
actually, like, this is the third time Pedro this year. Pascal. That's an Ari Aster issue. I think he's a very talented director who can't edit his own damn movies. He just refuses to cut. And it always bugs me when someone is so talented and so thoughtful in a lot of ways, but they just keep getting more excessive with every movie because they just start believing their own hype. That's what I see going on with Ari Aster. Sorry, I'm being honest.
Well, you know who's believing their own hype is Disney, because they think they can save the Fantastic Four by going back to the first steps on July 25th, when Marvel Studios First Steps introduces the first family, the Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, also played by Pedro Pascal.
You see my trend? You see the trend that I'm talking about here?
But you got to remember, these were all filmed long ago. So he had time in his schedule to film these when they were getting filmed.
There are 37 projects he's got coming out this year.
It is not his fault that they all got delayed because of the strikes and then dropped all in the same year. I'm just saying.
Go ahead and finish your plot description.
The guy's just going to make a shit ton of money this year.
Good for him. I'm happy for him.
Yeah. Sue Storm, Invisible Woman, played by Vanessa Kirby. Johnny Storm, Human Torch, is going to be played by Joseph Quinn. And Ben Grimm, The Thing, is going to be played by Eben Moss Bachrach. As they face their most daunting challenge yet, they'll be forced to balance their roles as heroes with the strength of their family bond. They must defend Earth from a ravenous space god called Galactus and his enigmatic herald, Silver Surfer, played by Julia Garner.
Love her.
So good. And if Galactus is planning to devour the entire planet and everyone on it weren't bad enough, it suddenly gets personal.
Ooh.
But Happy Gilmore 2 is coming, and you know that Happy makes everything personal, especially when it's related to his grandma.
Hmm.
So he's going on a new golfing adventure this time around. Julia Bowen will be back, as well as good old Shooter McGavin. So can't wait to see what Happy Gilmore does to counter-program the Fantastic Four on July 25th.
Yeah, and that's on Netflix. You guys listening missed a stellar Shooter McGavin impression that Troy just did when he went, pow, pow.
I bet you guys wish that this was on YouTube or something. You know what? Why don't you comment in the comments about whether or not we actually filmed this stuff and put it on YouTube?
Okay.
Don't comment. Throw $10 over at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider, patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. More money helps us buy things that we can then do video stuff.
There you go.
Oh, you see that? He actually just did a plug for the Patreon too.
He did.
He's really good at this, you know?
I'm telling you. But of these two movies, I'm more excited for Happy Gilmore 2, and I'm not ashamed of it.
Me as well. Because John Krasinski isn't Mr. Fantastic. They could have done it, and they decided to go with Pedro instead. I don't know why. I'm upset about it, and it's going to cause me maybe not to watch it. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't care
they teased
about that part.
Come on, they teased it. And they ripped
you
it
got
away.
It. You got it for a little bit. I mean, Pedro, like I think he'll actually be very good at this, honestly. Reed Richards?
He's good at everything.
Yeah.
It's Pedro.
He's a great actor. Newest trailer got me more excited for Fantastic Four.
It's never going to be flame on, though, in the way Chris Evans does it.
Okay. August 1st, the Bad Boys. No, not Bad Boys. The Bad Guys. Wow. Weird if Will Smith shows up here and just starts smacking cartoon characters. The Bad Guys are struggling to find trust and acceptance in their newly minted lives as good guys when they are pulled out of retirement and forced to do one last job by an all-female squad of criminals. Then we have The Naked Gun. It's the single most important Naked Gun movie since the other Naked Gun movies. Only one man has the particular set of skills to lead police squad and save the world, Liam Neeson. And this is a Seth MacFarlane movie, so get ready for some raunchy ass shit. And he stars in this as Lieutenant Frank Drebin Jr., son of the original Frank Drebin. Then we have Together, a couple move to a new home that holds a secret to eternal codependency, and it's not for the squeamish. I did see this one at South by Southwest. It's a fun, clever horror movie. Very independent in nature, but it's a fun film. Dave Franco and Alison Brie, and it's dark as hell as well. But John, I want to ask you, just because I think we cut you off from Fantastic Four. So we're going to go to the Naked Gun with you because I feel like this is your kind of movie.
Oh my God, this is so my kind of movie. I was originally very hesitant to the idea that they were going to bring this back until I realized that the person that they cast to play Frank Drebin Jr. was Liam Neeson, about the only person who can pull off this role nearly as well as Leslie Nielsen did. And the what's very cool about why they did this is that they frequently comment back to the fact that there is a little bit of confusion between Neeson and Nielsen, and it's one of the reasons why they did the casting the way they did, just to mess with us a little
bit. That's not why they cast him. Seth MacFarlane cast him because he's one of his favorite actors to work with, and he does a great deadpan. That's why they cast him. It's not because his name was Neeson and Nielsen. Lord.
I like my story better.
Your story's bullshit.
I believe our, I like my story I believe our John story, because that's why I thought it was done too.
No.
No, he was famously
he's been in a lot of Seth MacFarlane projects. He's been on Family Guy. He was in A Million Ways to Die in the West, which he was great in that. He was did that great freaking, was it Lucky Charms or whatever? Or what was the, he was on Ted or Ted 2, one of the two. And, oh God, he was trying to buy a box of cereal from Ted, and Ted's like, you can't.
Oh, it's Ted 2.
Yeah, Ted 2, and he's asking him if tricks are for kids. Are tricks really for kids? And it's just, it's a really funny bit. Like, all, Seth MacFarlane and him are friends, is what I'm saying.
All I hope is that the funniest bit wasn't in the trailer, because the trailer for The Naked Gun was hysterical.
It was so funny.
That, like, there's very few people who can do what Leslie Nielsen did. Very few people who can play it the way he did, and as comfortably as he did, and as masterfully as he did. Liam Neeson is one of those people, and I wholeheartedly believe that, and I'm so excited for this. And the OJ nod, kind of funny in the trailer.
That's pretty brilliant. If you haven't seen the trailer, there's a great OJ joke.
I just said the trailer was funny without giving that away, because some people don't watch the trailer.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm not editing it out, though, so it's there now.
So there you go. Our job. He's going to have one of his people edit it. He won't check his mailbox, but if you're pissed off that he gave away the fun joke, that was our John. Not me, our John.
I'm more excited about Will Smith smacking cartoon characters. I think that could be a lot of fun. I like that first movie, by the way. I did like the bad guys.
All right. August 6th, before we get into the August 8th weekend, drops Sketch. A 10-year-old Amber's comically dark drawings start coming to life. Her small town descends into chaos. Now her family must face Amber's living nightmares head on before her creations to destroy everything. This actually looks like it could be a sweet film. I believe this one's from Angel Studios.
It is from Angel Studios, yep.
Yeah, yeah, which is normally like a Christian, religious-backed
propaganda
firm.
Old thing, yeah.
They make some good films.
They make some good films, man. They made King of Kings. They just dropped on Easter weekend, or week before Easter. It was really good.
Yeah.
But this one looks interesting because it doesn't, from the trailer and the premise I saw, it does not look very religious at all. So I'm curious to see what angle this is going to take.
No, it does. I could be reading it wrong, but if you watch the trailer, it seems a little bit like, you know, they're kind of showing that it's okay to have an imagination. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Even though this kid's imagination is dark, doesn't mean that she's a monster, that sort of thing. So that's what I gathered from it.
But it's not overtly religious in the trailer.
No, not anyway. No, I didn't see that.
So maybe Angel's starting to branch out a little bit, which would be interesting. Then we move into the weekend with more of our sequel summer, Freakier Friday. That's right. More adventures of mother Tess Coleman, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, and her daughter Anna by Lindsay Lohan. They are back, and more switcheroo-y fun is going to happen.
Switcheroo-y fun.
And then Weapons brings us a chilling mystery that has gripped the small town of Maybrook after 17 children voluntarily left their homes Wednesday morning. Where did they go? I'm already hooked. What happened to them? Why can't anyone find them? What is going on? This is a very creepy premise behind the new horror thriller movie titled Weapons. This next movie from the acclaimed genre filmmaker Zach Cregger, following his breakout hit Barbarian. I am super stoked about this one. And then North Star we have as the final for the weekend. Three sisters return to their childhood home for a momentous weekend, the third wedding of their twice-widowed mother, Diana Frost. The three daughters are from very different walks of life. Georgina is a hospice nurse, Victoria is a Hollywood star, and Catherine is a captain in the Royal Navy. Over the weekend, the family gathers to celebrate the new marriage, but mother and daughters alike are forced to revisit the past and confront the future, all with little help from a colorful group of unexpected wedding guests. ScarJo is here for her second movie this summer, plus Sienna Miller, Kristen Scott Thomas, and Emily Beecham. That is North Star and Weapons and Freak Your Friday, all coming out August 8th.
I recently saw the trailer for Weapons, and I am just fascinated by whatever it is that's happening in that trailer. Mm-hmm. I think it's an expertly cut trailer that tells just enough of the story that gets you in without really unraveling the whole story in front of you. And it in itself was a very tense 2 minutes of just viewing time. So I'm so down for Weapons. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. And I got to say that I'm very happy for people that are fans. I've seen a lot of people that are really excited about Freakier Friday, and I'm very happy for them. It doesn't do anything for me. I'm not a big fan of the original. Parent Trap would have got me, but not Freakier Friday. But Weapons, so far, what they've done is a very good job of marketing it without telling you anything. It's doing a much more enigmatic, mysterious kind of marketing campaign, which means I'm not going to watch any trailers for that one. It just seems like the kind of movie where I want to be taken completely by surprise.
Yeah, it feels like it's doing the job of what like a J.J. Abrams type situation would do, where they were dropping hints along the way in different spots. Kind of like when Cloverfield came out and there was all that marketing tied to it initially. It feels like that. And I hope that they don't give anything away before it drops in August, because, yeah, that trailer, John, I was like, what is this? I need it tomorrow.
Yeah. Like the whole kids running across the grass the way they were. I'm like, what is happening? And I need to see this.
Absolutely. All right. Well, on August 15th, you're going to get Hutch Mansell back. Bob Odenkirk is returning in Nobody 2, which is, if you didn't see that, that's a seemingly ordinary suburban father who suppressed his past as a deadly government assassin, and he was unfortunately forced out of the open. And this also has Christopher Lloyd returning as his dad. The original one, it's surprising that they're getting a sequel, because it came out kind of during COVID times when the theaters were mostly shut down. It did okay at the box office. Not very good, honestly, but it was a huge hit on video once it released there. So they're making a sequel to it, and I think this will be a lot of fun. Then we also have Witchboard, which I believe is a remake of the Tony Katane flick, the gem, the 80s
1986,
gem.
Yeah.
A couple's plans to open a New Orleans cafe takes a dark turn with the discovery of an ancient witch board, a mysterious artifact once used to summon spirits that soon draws them into a race against time to break its deadly curse. All you got to do is move that little thing to no, and you can get right on out of there. Those are the two ones that come out that weekend. Yeah, it's going to be Nobody 2 for me all the way.
It's not like you just sit there and like do star 69 on the thing or whatever the code was to block anything on it.
I don't, they don't work. It's not real. It's always your buddy. Here's the thing. If you're using a witch board, if you're using a Ouija board, it's your buddy. If it's moving and it's not you, it's your buddy. It's always them. If they say it's not them, they're a goddamn liar. Get new friends.
I'm really excited about Nobody 2. Bob Odenkirk blew me away with with the first movie, and I thought it was just amazing. There's just something beautiful about that, what it is. And Bob Odenkirk being an action hero, give me a break. If somebody were to told me that before I saw the movie, I would have been like, shut the front door. I don't know why I chose then to say shut the front door when I could have said so many other times instead of using the actual words. Yeah, but yeah,
could have been. Yep.
Could have been. I just had to make sure I got the explicit in before I gave up.
Look, like when Nobody hit, I was like, why am I going to watch Bob Odenkirk in this? Like, that does not seem like a Bob Odenkirk thing. And then you see it and you're just like, what? That is so good. So yes, in for the sequel all the way.
The guy is so good, he gave himself a heart attack. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
That's true.
Yep. Just that good. He's that good.
August 22nd. Getting close to the end of summer, people. Americana is here. Following local outsiders and outcasts in a small South Dakota town whose lives violently intertwine after a rare artifact falls onto the black market. Cindy Sweeney makes her summer drop here, along with Eric Dane, Zach McLaren, and Paul Waterhouse. So it's going to be an interesting one for sure. Because Eden then counter-programs that with a handful of people inhabiting the Galapagos Islands, who do not wish to share this idyllic spot with one another. because Sydney Sweeney is going up against herself, along with Ana de Armas, Jude Law, and Vanessa Kirby in that one.
I'm seeing that one.
Sold.
Sorry. Winner, winner. Yep, that's the one.
Chicken dinner.
That's the one.
I just hope it's not
Island Paradise, those three women, I think so. Sorry.
I just hope it's not the beach. Like a kind of play off the beach. I'll put something different.
I was sold for Jude Law. That's what I was saying for. God, I'm not. I shamed on you, John. It just sounds like quite an acting.
Oh, hold on. Yeah. Let's back this shitstorm up real quick. I wasn't listening
to him at all.
He said he hopes it doesn't play off of the beach, which is a beautiful Danny Boyle story. And I can't believe he said that because it was also written by Alex Garland.
The beach is terrible.
I love the beach.
I don't. What? I don't like the beach. I like the beach. I don't like the beach.
Oh my God, I'm so disappointed in you.
I'm sorry.
The soundtrack is amazing.
I don't, it's not memorable to me.
The whole part where Leo plays like you're playing a video game, like that's like the, it's so good.
Oh, I love that movie. That movie hit me for just the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you watch the alternate ending. Ooh, oh my gosh.
I don't know if I've ever seen the alternate
ending. Dude, you need to see the alternate ending.
Dude. Bro.
Go look up the alternate ending.
Bro, I'm going to look at the alternate ending, bro. I'm going to do it now.
You're
going to
be thankful they didn't do the alternate ending in the actual movie because I think it ruins it. But the alternate ending is so good.
And then on August 22nd, we have Honey Don't with an exclamation point. And this movie stars Margaret Qualley, Aubrey Plaza, and Chris Evans. And it's about Honey O'Donohue, a small-town private investigator who delves into a series of strange deaths tied to a mysterious church. Charlie Day and Billy Eichner also star in this with a script by Ethan Coen and Trisha Cook. So one of the Coen brothers is back in business.
Wait,
was Relay on your list?
Yeah, Relay's also coming.
Okay.
Tom is a world-class fixer who specializes in brokering lucrative payoffs between corrupt corporations and the individuals who threaten their ruin. He keeps his identity a secret, though, through meticulous planning and always follows an exacting set of rules. But when a message arrives one day from a potential client, Sarah, needing Tom's protection just to stay alive, the rules quickly start to change. This one is going to star Lily James playing Sarah and Riz Ahmed playing Tom. Sam Worthington also stars in this one as well.
Yeah, this one gets me just for Riz Ahmed because that's what I really want to see it for that reason. I think he's an amazing actor and everything I've ever seen him in, I've really enjoyed seeing him in. So that's why that Relay might be the one that I spend the most time actually with.
Lily James is also a great actress too.
Great actress.
So let's not shortchange her. But yeah,
I didn't shortchange her. I just held up Riz Ahmed because he doesn't get enough love.
Just saying, I'm still going to Eden.
For Jude Law.
Yeah, because Jude Law is an actor.
Because he is so very sexy.
I wonder why he signed up to star in this movie.
I can't imagine.
I wonder. What was he thinking?
I'm going to pretend to do what and be how close to who? Oh, that sounds terrible. Sign me up.
Oh, his interview circuit's going to be a blast.
I do have to say Jude Law, though, definitely one of the better Jedis I've ever seen.
Okay, not everything has to be about
Star Wars. Now you just ruined it.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
You're just being weird. All right, so August 29th.
That made it weird.
August 29th, The Roses, the chandelier-shattering legacy of Barbara and Oliver Rose is passed down to their children. Josh marries Victoria only to see the marriage fall apart over an incident involving missing Milky Way bars, and Evie is a promiscuous overeater carrying her own shrapnel. The result is deceit, violence, and destruction. It stars Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's based on the War of the Roses. If you remember the Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner movie, which is also Warren Adler's 1981 novel, The War of the Roses, that same inspiration there. So you're getting basically a continuation or remake, whatever you want to say, of The Roses. August 28th, one more, The Thursday Murder Club on Netflix, directed by Harry Potter and Home Alone's Chris Columbus. And based on Richard Osman's book, and I think Chris Columbus, the last thing he did was Christmas Chronicles 2, if I remember right, as a director. The film is set in an English retirement community and follows a former spy played by Helen Mirren, a union activist, Pierce Brosnan, a shrink, Ben Kingsley, and a nurse, Acelia Imrie, as they spend their free time solving cold cases. But then a murder shows up at their front door, and the game is truly afoot. Yeah, you can think of that as like only murders in the retirement village. but it looks and sounds like a blast, and it's going to be on Netflix. Then you have The Toxic Avenger. Meet Melvin, a skinny, weak, wimpy janitor at the local health club in a small town in New Jersey. This is one more remake. He is teased and taunted by the beautiful men and women of the club until Melvin is exposed to chemical waste and becomes the Toxic Avenger, writer of wrongs and foe to pollution. That's got the Dinklage, Peter Dinklage, the guy who ruined Snow White. It's really his fault. All right, caught stealing. Hank Thompson, a burnt-out former baseball player, unwittingly plunges into a wild fight for survival in the downtown criminal underworld of 1990s New York City. This is a Darren Aronofsky movie starring Austin Butler and Regina King, which means it's a Darren Aronofsky movie. I will never see it. Have a nice day. What do you guys think?
I mean, I like the title, Caught Stealing. That's clever. But yeah, Darren, no, probably not. I'll be on a bike ride that weekend, so I won't see any of these.
I can't get past the title of Caught Stealing.
Why?
Because every time I keep on, you know, it's Jane's Addiction. I keep on hearing the song from Jane's Addiction over and over again every time you say Caught Stealing. Hmm. And so, but I'm not going to go see it because Aaron really hates Darren Aronofsky, and I cannot watch that in solidarity with my boy Aaron. Oh, that's
nice. Don't blame me for you realizing that it's better taste to walk away.
Yeah. I'm giving you credit for my better taste. The Toxic Avenger, on the other hand, speaking of better taste.
Yes, I will go see it. Absolutely.
I am so excited to go back to Troma. It's going to be great.
This is going to be a terrible, wonderful movie. Terrible and wonderful. And it's from Cineverse, the guys who resurrected and saved Terrifier. So if you like, you know, cheesy horror, it's right up there.
I love the fact that Peter Dinklage chose to be a part of this because he's not a small actor these days.
What, was that a pun?
I realized that was a poor choice of words.
Glad it's attributed to you. Have fun with that.
He's a big actor these days. He's an important guy.
Now he went too far the other way.
Yeah, I tried to fix it and just broke it even more. It's not like The Knights of Badassdom where he filmed that before he became Peter Dinklage. Like it's a whole thing.
Yeah, he signed on for this. He chose the part. He could get better parts or different parts. Maybe it's not a better part. I mean, he obviously, you know, maybe he's a fan of Troma films, you know, from the 80s. If you don't know what that is, just really cheesy. James Gunn got a start over at Troma. So yeah, they used to make a lot of really bad, cheesy 80s horror kind of exploitative films, I guess. They were fun, though. They were a lot of fun. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a good time if you want to watch something cheesy that has good, fun effects that either can look terrible or look amazing. This is the movie for you. Or this is that's the series that you want to watch.
Now, that is the end of the summer movie preview. That is all the titles. So I want to ask you this. What's one specific thing about this summer's films? All of those we just talked about. And I'm sure, you know what? Dates change. Movies move around. New things get added, get taken away. You can't hold us to it throughout. These are the dates and the titles as we record this. But Troy, what's one specific thing about the summer's films that stood out for you?
The thing that stood out for me is that we're back to the same old Hollywood script. Sequels. Sequels sell summer.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Final Destination. Another Simple Favor.
Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible. On the line. Yeah.
Remakes. Yeah. Roses. Toxic Avenger. Nobody 2. Sequels. Yeah, there's a lot of Freakier Friday. Yep.
But
there's
some new stuff, Fear too. Street. Yeah, that's why Weapons, I think, is going to be the biggest surprise of the summer because it's like an original thing and very mysterious. And there was like a bidding war the minute this thing came out. New Line secured the rights within 24 hours, offering $38 million to cover all the costs, including film production and salaries.
Must be a good film.
So clearly someone liked what they read.
I don't know. I think when I look at this film lineup for the summer, this is the first time in a long time I'm excited for more than just a small handful of movies. I can say that
it's a good slate.
There's an excuse. Yeah, it's a good slate. There's an excuse for me to go to the theaters every single weekend, except for that one where I'm going to read a book. So I'm excited for it.
I'm stoked, man. There's a lot of movies I am genuinely stoked for. Life of Chuck, Dangerous Animals, just to find out what a shark-obsessed serial killer even is. Like, what the hell is that? bring her back. I mean, I love a good horror movie in the summer. I just think like there's some things I don't care about. Megan 2, I just don't think we needed that one. I feel like they're just okay, get the money, I get it. But there's a lot of good stuff, and there's some good stuff streaming too, man. Fountain of Youth and what was it, Echo Valley sounds cool. Like there's a lot of cool stuff streaming as well if you really just don't want to go to the theater. But there's a lot of stuff that will definitely get me into a theater every single week, possibly multiple times, which I love.
That's right. There's always something every weekend because I've not gotten any use really out of my AMC membership the first quarter of the year. So let's go ahead and really
just amp it up,
make it up.
Yeah, no, this makes me really excited that I have an AMC membership this summer. So I will be finding an excuse to go to the theater as much as possible now for sure.
Let's give it a grade of this slate, right? So $10 is the full price of admission. What do you give this slate of movies for this year? I'm giving it a solid $8. I think this is one of the best slates we've had in a few years.
Yeah, I'm going to go $8.50 for this slate.
I'm going $7.50 only because of the sequel and rehash remake.
But there are always sequels and rehashes and remake every summer.
I know. That's every why year. I'm just...
Okay. All right. Well, John, what is your prediction? We do this every summer to see. What's your prediction for what's the biggest hit out of all these? And you only get to pick one. There's no honorable mentions. And the biggest flop. Biggest hit, biggest flop.
My prediction right now is that Superman is going to end up being the biggest hit. It's not going to necessarily be something that surprises a lot of people, but it's going to be in that neighborhood. It's going to be just whatever is just after surprise on the scale. It's going to be there because people are going to be shocked to see that so many people showed up to the theater for it.
Okay.
The biggest flop, I hate to say it because I love the series. It's going to be Mission Impossible.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like that one's going to be the biggest flop. I feel like the last one kind of left people feeling a little weird, and I think that's going to carry over to this one.
You didn't like the
last one? I loved it too, but I've talked to people who said that they didn't like the way it ended, and they don't like the way it didn't feel like a finished movie. So it's like that's
a huge cliffhanger. Ends on a huge because it was called Part One, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. What about you, Troy? Biggest hit, biggest flop.
How to Train Your Dragon. Definitely going to win the summer.
Really?
You got a whole new audience of people that have never seen it before. You got people that love Toothless are going to come back and see it again. It's on Father's Day weekend, and it's a story about a father and a son. I mean, it's like it's got all the hallmarks of just making summer money. Like, just print the check. Flop-wise, I mean, a $400 million budget, if you're talking monetarily, yeah, Mission Impossible is going to take the tank on that one for sure.
Biggest hit for me, Jurassic World Rebirth. I think dinosaur movies always crush it. Sorry. I think it's going to do much better than Superman. Biggest flop, I think Fantastic Four. I just don't know if people are really, your everyday fans that aren't superhero nuts are really not caring about this. The cast is great. Don't get me wrong, but we've already had several runs at this series and I just don't know if people care. And you just had a movie last year that proved that people already have their favorite Johnny Storm. So.
Well, and then there was a movie before that where we already had our favorite Mr. Fantastic.
Yes, exactly. So got a lot to stack up to. I mean, maybe I could be wrong, but I do think this is a make or break time for superhero movies. So I really do believe that. If Superman is not a hit and Thunderbolts is not a hit, or at least Thunderbolts or Fantastic Four, one of them has to be a massive hit or Marvel's in deep shit. Superman, if it flops, I don't know what happens to DC, the new DC universe. I mean, I think, does it end right there? Like, is that, I know they're doing Supergirl, they're filming it right now and they're doing other stuff, but do you really want to keep going with Supergirl if Superman flops?
That's a tough call, especially considering Warner Brothers has already proven that they will shelve whatever they feel like shelving at any single point.
Sell that shit. Get some tax write-offs.
Yeah. That's exactly right. They've already shelved so many things. And the only I'm still surprised to see that we're going to actually get Coyote versus Acme. So
it's crazy. It's crazy. Well, anything in closing before I give you the listener top 10, anything you guys want to talk about or add to about this?
I'm really surprised that of how much of the streaming that's coming out this year that I'm really happy about, because there's so many things that are coming streaming that makes me excited that I still have a bunch of these memberships.
I'm just surprised that the streamers aren't at least putting it into the theater for a weekend before bringing it back to the streaming service.
Well, Netflix won't do it. They just they've only, I think, done that for Glass Onion.
Award.
Or they do it to qualify for Oscars too. So if they think it's something that's Oscar worthy. All right. So the listener, we took a poll on our Facebook group, not the page, in the group, The Hollywood Outsider. It's a private group. Just search for it and you can join up and you can participate in our polls as well. But ask, what are you most excited about to see this summer? So here's a top 10. Drum roll, please. Thank you. Number 10, Freakier Friday. Number 9, Final Destination Bloodlines. Number 8, The Naked Gun. Number 7, Jurassic World Rebirth. Oh, my pick is way down at the bottom. Yeah, I think that's way too low for audiences. Dinosaurs win all the time, man. Number 6 is Ballerina. I think that's low, too. 5, 28 Years Later. Man, I'm surprised this movie's getting so much hype, but I'm happy for it. Number 4 is Fantastic Four. Maybe I'm misreading it. Number 3 is Thunderbolts. Number 2 is Michigan Impossible.
I'd watch that. I crossed Michigan on a bike. It is kind of a strange environment up there.
That's funny.
Is it a road that you just can't cross, or is it a football team that just can't win?
All right. Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, and number 1, look up, it's Superman.
I think Fantastic Four and Jurassic World should be flipped. Otherwise, it's a good ranking.
That's good. Yeah. I like to see Naked Gun creeping on there. That wasn't on anybody's radar. It really wasn't.
And then the trailer came out and it was like, that's damn funny.
Yeah. That was so much. And I got to be honest, I like Seth MacFarlane's movies. I love It's a Million Ways to Die in the West. I love that movie. Nobody else seems to, but I love that movie.
Even his TV shows are good too.
Yeah, man. I mean, shit. Family Guy's been on, it was Resurrected. Now it's been on for 400 years or something.
Man, I never thought we needed the Orville, but the more you watch the Orville, you're just like, man, I really miss the Orville.
I really wish they got a final season. I really do. I like that show a lot. Yeah. All right. Well, that's it. That's Summer Movie Preview. If you would, please rate and review us in your favorite podcast app. Share this show on your social media outlets. Tell your friends, hey, you guys want to hear about everything coming out this summer? Bam. Listen to these guys. They're great, except when they're not, but mostly great. We would appreciate it. And you can always find us at The Hollywood Outsider on Facebook and Threads and everywhere else. And we're on X at By Popcorn. There's a page, there's a group, there's all that stuff. But we're also at thehollywoodoutsider.com.
And we are going to put the list of movies up this time.
I said that at the beginning.
I know. I'm reiterating it. Coming back. It's a comeback, whatever. Callback.
Comeback would be, you dumbass. All right, we're out of here. So remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. Segue out of that, bitch. Ha 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 ha!